A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's talking about something I've been noticing in his life lately. He picked up a tactical EDC belt, and it's basically changed how he thinks about buying things. He used to go through belts in a season, even from supposedly decent brands, and now he's found this one product that just works, and he's asking the bigger question, how do you find those genuinely durable products by tapping into the communities that actually know what they're talking about? Not the Buy It For Life subreddit, which we've talked about, but the more informal, passionate networks where people share this stuff freely. The belt was his gateway drug, and now he wants the methodology.
He's right to be excited about that belt. I mean, a belt is one of those things where failure is both sudden and deeply inconvenient. You're carrying a toddler, you're holding a drill, and suddenly your pants are heading south. There's no recovering gracefully from that.
The physics of humiliation. All downward vectors, zero dignity.
Let's unpack why a belt became the gateway drug to a whole philosophy of buying things. Because the belt industry is actually a perfect microcosm of what's wrong with most consumer product categories. You've got $30 belt at the department store that starts sagging within 6 months. You've got $80 genuine leather belts that turn out to be bonded leather. Basically leather dust glued to a fabric backing, and they delaminate after a year of daily use. The whole industry is optimized for what I'd call first purchase satisfaction. It feels good in the store, it looks right, and by the time it fails, you've already forgotten where you bought it.
You don't blame the belt, you blame yourself. Maybe I'm hard on belts.
But here's the counterexample Daniel stumbled into. A tactical EDC belt. We're talking nylon webbing, usually something like 1,000 denier cordura, with a cobra buckle made from 7075 aluminum or steel. These were originally designed for military load-bearing. They're rated for thousands of pounds of tensile strength. And they've been adopted by this subculture of gear nerds who will debate webbing thickness, buckle material, stitch density, things no normal person thinks about when buying a belt.
Which is precisely the point Daniel's making. The knowledge exists. It's just locked inside forum threads frequented by people who care way too much about belt construction. And if you want the good information, those are exactly the people you need to find.
That's the thesis I want to trace through this whole episode. The best product information doesn't come from review sites or manufacturer marketing. It comes from informal, passionate networks where the cost of being wrong is personal reputation. A stranger on a forum who's been posting detailed gear reviews for 5 years has more to lose by giving you a bad recommendation than Wirecutter does.
Wirecutter can publish a correction. That guy on the forum gets called out publicly and loses credibility he spent years building. The incentives are completely different.
To understand why these communities work, we need to look at the mechanics, both of the belt and of the signal. Let's start with the belt itself, because the engineering choices are surprisingly revealing. A mainstream belt fails in predictable ways. Bonded leather delaminates, the layers separate, and you get this peeling, flaking mess. Plastic buckles snap, especially in cold weather. I've seen plastic buckles shatter at 10 below zero. Thin webbing stretches under load over time, so a belt that fit perfectly in month 1 is sagging by month 6.
The tactical belt community has basically solved all of these through material selection. But the solutions aren't obvious unless someone explains them to you.
So take the webbing. The standard in these communities is 1,000 denier, cordura nylon, sometimes scorpion webbing, which is a specific type of nylon weave. Denier is a measure of fiber thickness. 1,000 denier means it's a heavy, abrasion-resistant material originally developed for military body armor carriers. Compare that to the 600 denier polyester you'll find on a $50 tactical belt from Amazon. Polyester has lower tensile strength, it abrades faster, and it doesn't hold its shape under repeated loading.
Someone buying the Amazon belt thinks they're getting the same thing because it's black and has webbing and looks vaguely military, but the material is doing completely different work.
Then there's the buckle. The Cobra Buckle, which is actually a brand name from a company called Austrialpen, is a quick-release buckle made from 7075 aluminum or steel. It's rated for load bearing up to several thousand pounds. The mechanism is a double locking system. You push two buttons simultaneously to release it, which means it can't accidentally open. A plastic side release buckle, the kind you'd find on a typical casual belt, has a single point of failure. The plastic fatigues, the spring weakens, and one day you bend over and it just pops.
You've got material choices preventing delamination, webbing choices preventing stretch, buckle choices preventing catastrophic failure, and none of this is on the product label at a department store.
Which brings us to where the information actually lives. The Buy It For Life subreddit, Bifel, is the most obvious starting point. It works as a signal aggregator. Community voting, long-term ownership posts where someone says, I've worn this belt daily for 5 years, here's what it looks like, and the failure posts that expose design flaws. Someone posts a picture of their belt that delaminated after 8 months, and suddenly everyone knows to avoid that brand.
There are real limitations. Survivorship bias is a big one. The people posting 5-year reviews are the people whose belts survived 5 years. The people whose belts failed in 6 months might have just thrown them out and moved on without posting.
There's groupthink. Bifel tends to cluster around a handful of brands, Hank's belts, Grip 6, that get recommended over and over. They're good belts, but the community can become an echo chamber. Someone new shows up, sees the same 3 brands mentioned in every thread, and assumes those are the only options.
Then there's the Reddit API changes from a couple years back. A lot of knowledgeable users left the platform or moved to Discord servers and dedicated forums. The signal in some of these subreddits has degraded. You're seeing more low-effort posts, more affiliate marketing disguised as recommendations.
This is where it gets interesting. The real gold, in my experience, is in what I'd call second-order communities. These are subreddits and forums that aren't explicitly about durability or buying things for life. They're about specific activities or use cases, and the use case naturally selects for products that survive.
Give me an example.
For belts specifically, you want to look at r/EDC, that's everyday carry, r/tactical gear, r/qualitacticalgear, and r/VEDC, which is vehicle EDC. These communities are full of people who carry heavy gear daily. Firearms, medical kits, multi-tools, flashlights. They're not asking which belt will last a long time. They're asking which belt will hold up a loaded holster and 2 magazine pouches for a 12-hour day without sagging. The durability question is baked into the use case.
You're getting stress test data from people who are actually stressing the product, not a reviewer who wore it around the office for a week.
A belt recommended in r/quali tactical gear has been vetted by people who wear plate carriers. They're attaching holsters, dump pouches, medical kits. If the belt sags or the buckle fails during a training course, that's not an inconvenience. It's a safety issue. The standard for what counts as durable is completely different.
What brands actually emerge from those communities?
Blue Alpha Gear is one that comes up constantly. Their Mola belt is about $45, made in the USA, 1,000 Denier Cordura, Cobra Buckle. Volland Gearworks is another. They make belts with a slightly different design philosophy, using a micro-adjustable buckle instead of a Cobra. Ares Gear, same tier. These aren't household names, you won't find them at the mall. But in these communities, they're the standard.
The discussions around them are granular in a way that no product page would ever be. I've seen threads debating whether 1.5 inch webbing is sufficient, or whether you need 1.75 inches for serious load bearing. Whether the Cobra buckle is worth the weight penalty over an Austrialpen quick release. Whether Scorpion webbing actually outperforms mil-spec nylon in wet conditions.
These aren't marketing terms. They're engineering choices that directly affect lifespan. A 1.75 inch belt distributes weight better and resists rolling, but it might not fit through standard belt loops on dress pants. A Cobra buckle is bomb-proof but heavy and metallic. It'll set off metal detectors. The community hashes all of this out, and the consensus that emerges is based on collective experience, not a spec sheet.
There's a specific resource worth mentioning. The r/qualitacticalgear subreddit maintains a community wiki, a belt guide that ranks belts by stitch count, buckle type, webbing material. It's maintained by volunteers who update it based on user reports. That's a level of detailed, crowdsourced quality control that no commercial review site can match.
The stitch count thing is fascinating. Stitching is where belts fail. The buckle attachment point takes the most stress, and if the bar tack stitch isn't dense enough, the webbing pulls through over time. These communities count stitches per inch and compare across brands. That's the kind of obsessive detail that produces durable products.
I've actually got a strong opinion on this, by the way. The older Carhartt belt loop attachment, the one they used before they switched to the modern bar tack stitch, was more durable for heavy EDC belts. The older design distributed the load differently. The new one is faster to manufacture, but creates a stress point.
See, this is exactly the kind of knowledge that only exists in these communities. Someone who's owned both versions, worn both for years, and can tell you the exact failure mode of the newer design. You can't get that from an Amazon review written 3 days after purchase.
Once you've seen the pattern in belts, you start seeing it everywhere. Here's how to apply the lens to any product category.
This is the gateway gear phenomenon Daniel's experiencing. You find one product category where the community has cracked the code, and suddenly you start asking the same questions about everything you buy. The tactical belt buyer becomes the person who buys darn tough socks. Merino wool, lifetime warranty, made in Vermont. They find Surefire flashlights. They discover GoRuck backpacks. The communities overlap heavily. The guy on r/EDC who recommended your belt is also posting about his GOR UKGR1 that survived 5 years of daily use and still looks new.
Each category has its own equivalent of the Cobra buckle, the specific feature or material choice that separates durable from disposable. Once you learn to look for it, you can find it in almost anything.
Let me give you some concrete examples. Work boots. You want r/work boots and r/Red Wing shoes. The Cobra buckle equivalent there is Goodyear welt construction versus cemented soles. A Goodyear welt means the sole is stitched to a leather strip, which is stitched to the upper. When the sole wears out, a cobbler can replace it. Cemented soles are just glued on. When they wear out, the boot is garbage. The communities will also tell you which Red Wing models are still made in the USA versus which have moved production overseas, and whether the quality difference is real or perceived.
Those communities are brutal about calling out cost-cutting. If a manufacturer switches from a full gray leather to a corrected grain, someone notices within weeks and posts about it.
Carry luggage, r/one bag, and r/many baggers. The Cobra buckle equivalent is YKK zippers versus off-brand, and Cordura fabric versus generic nylon. A bag can look identical in photos but have completely different zipper hardware. YKK zippers are the industry standard for a reason. They don't fail. An off-brand zipper on a 40-liter travel bag is a disaster waiting to happen, and the communities know exactly which brands spec YKK throughout versus which ones cut corners on the internal pockets.
Kitchen knives, r/chef knives. The equivalent is carbon steel versus stainless, and the specific heat treatment of the blade. A knife can look beautiful and feel sharp out of the box, but if the heat treatment is wrong, it won't hold an edge. That community can tell you which Japanese blacksmiths are producing exceptional VG10 steel at a given price point, and which mass market brands are charging premium prices for mediocre steel with good marketing.
Even household tools, r/tools and the Bifel subreddit. The equivalent there is brushless motors in power tools or full tang construction in hand tools. Project Farm on YouTube. This is a channel that does scientific stress testing of tools, has become the gold standard for this category. He'll test 10 brands of wrench, measure exactly how much torque they can handle before failing, and show you the results in slow motion.
Project Farm is the platonic ideal of what we're talking about. One guy in a workshop, no sponsors, just testing things until they break and showing you what happened. That channel has saved people thousands of dollars.
The information retrieval problem becomes, how do you systematically find these communities for any product category? Because most people don't even know r/chef knives exists until they've already bought 3 bad knives.
This is where search strategy matters. Daniel's asking about methodology, so let's get practical.
First technique, site-specific search. You search site:reddit.com product name versus competitor name. That brings up comparison threads. You're looking for threads with 100+ comments because that indicates genuine debate, not marketing. A thread with 3 comments is noise. A thread with 200 comments where people are citing specific failure pattern and long-term experiences, that's signal.
You filter by top of all time to find the long-term reviews. Someone posting, I've used this daily for 3 years, is worth more than 50. Just got this, and it looks great. Posts.
Second technique. You look for the dedicated forums off Reddit. Blade forums for knives, candle power forums for flashlights, the EDC forums for general carry gear. These are old-school HPBB-style forums that have been running for 15 or 20 years. The user base is smaller but more knowledgeable. The signal-to-noise ratio is higher because the barrier to entry is higher. You have to actually create an account and participate, not just upvote and scroll.
Those forums have institutional memory. A thread from 2012 about a specific flashlight's driver circuit is still searchable and still relevant. Reddit's architecture buries old content.
Third technique. Find the YouTube reviewer who actually stress tests. Not the unboxing channels. Not the first impressions people. The ones who use the product for 6 months and then report back. For belts, there's a channel called Tactical Toolbox that does exactly this. For tools, Project Farm. For backpacks, Chase Reeves does long-term reviews. These creators build their reputation on being right, and their comment sections become de facto community hubs.
You cross-reference. You find a belt recommended on Reddit. You check if Tactical Toolbox has tested it. You see if it's on the QualiTactical Gear Wiki, and you look for long-term ownership posts. If it passes all three, you've got a real signal.
This brings me to the social capital angle, which I think is the most interesting part. Why do these passionate minorities share this information freely? They're not getting paid. They're not getting affiliate commissions, at least not in the communities we're talking about. They're doing it because reputation is the currency. In these communities, reputation is earned by providing accurate, detailed advice over time. Someone posts a thorough review with measurements, photos, and a 6-month follow-up. That person gains standing. Other users recognize their username. Their recommendations carry weight. And the flip side is that a bad recommendation gets called out publicly. You recommend a belt, someone buys it, based on your recommendation, it fails. They come back to the thread and say so. Your credibility takes a hit.
The community is self-policing in a way that formal review systems aren't. An Amazon review has no reputation attached to it. It's anonymous, or at least pseudonymous, and there's no ongoing accountability. You can post a 5-star review the day you receive the product, and never think about it again.
Wirecutter tests 5 belts for 2 weeks and publishes a recommendation. A Reddit thread on r/EDC has 50 people reporting 3-year outcomes. Wirecutter can't match that because they don't have 50 people using the belt for 3 years. They have a small team and a deadline. The community has thousands of people and no deadline.
The Wirecutter review might be perfectly competent for what it is, but it's measuring first impressions and short-term performance. Durability is a long-term property. You literally cannot assess it quickly.
I want to give a specific case study that illustrates this. The backpack debate on r/minibaggers, GoruSeek versus 511 versus Mystery Ranch. There's a thread there with over 400 comments. People are posting detailed failure reports. The 511 Rush 12 zipper failed after 18 months of daily use. The GoruXeek CR1 shoulder straps took 6 months to break in, but now they're perfect. Mystery Ranch's tri-zip design is great for access, but the zipper pulls snag on brush. This is granular, experience-based knowledge that no review site could replicate.
The consensus that emerges isn't. His brand is best. It's this brand is best for this specific use case, and here's the trade-off. That's the sophistication you get from collective experience.
What does this mean for your next purchase? Let me give you a concrete framework.
I've been calling this the 3 community check. Before buying any durable good, you find 3 sources. First, the relevant Reddit community. Second, the dedicated forum if one exists. Third, the YouTube reviewer who actually stress tests. You cross-reference recommendations across all 3.
Your search strategy is specific. Use site:reddit.com, product name long-term review. Sort by votes. Look for comments that mention 2 years or daily carry. Avoid threads where the original post contains affiliate links. Those are marketing, not community.
The buy once, cry once principle applies here. Daniel's tactical belt costs somewhere between $45 and $80 up front. The alternative was spending $25 to $30 every 6 months on a belt that would sag, delaminate, or break. Over 5 years, the tactical belt saves you somewhere between $100 and $200. And more importantly, it eliminates the frustration of a failed belt at an inconvenient moment.
The principle scales. Darn Tough socks cost $20 a pair. They have a lifetime warranty, you wear a hole in them, you mail them back, they send you a new pair. Over a decade, you might spend $60 on 3 pairs instead of $150 on 15 pairs of cheaper socks that wear through. But the real value isn't the money. It's never having to think about socks again. You just own good socks.
That's the part that doesn't show up in a price comparison. The cognitive load of constantly replacing things. The mental overhead of wondering whether your belt is going to fail today.
There's a catch. These networks are fragile. Here's what worries me.
As these communities grow, they attract commercial interest. Brands start sponsoring posts. Affiliate marketing creeps in. The Reddit API changes already push some of the most knowledgeable users to Discord servers and private forums, where their knowledge is less discoverable.
Discord is great for real-time discussion, but terrible for archival knowledge. A Reddit thread from 5 years ago is still findable on Google. A Discord conversation from last week is already buried. If the expertise migrates to platforms that aren't publicly searchable, the signal degrades for everyone else.
The incentive structure shifts. When a community is small and passionate, reputation is the only currency. When it gets big enough to monetize, suddenly there's a financial incentive to recommend products. The line between genuine enthusiasm and paid promotion gets blurry.
I don't think this means the model is broken, but it means the work of finding good information is ongoing. The communities that existed 5 years ago may not be the best sources today. You have to keep recalibrating.
The tactical belt is a metaphor. The best information is often hiding in plain sight, in communities that care more about the product than the sale. The work is finding them, and the work is ongoing. But once you've done it for one category, you know how to do it for all of them.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, a tidal bore on the Sir Daria River, which then fed the Aral Sea, was recorded traveling upstream at an estimated speed of 22 miles per hour, making it the fastest documented river bore in the Aral Sea basin before Soviet irrigation projects altered the river's flow permanently.
22 miles an hour upstream. That's a river with somewhere to be.
The idea of a wave outrunning a horse is going to stick with me.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping this show running. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My Weird Prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My Weird Prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.